Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Welcome back to another fabulous Tax Tuesday, where we're bringing tax knowledge to the masses. My name is Toby Mathis, and I'm joined by none other than Jeff Webb.
Welcome.
And we're going to go and spend some time with you going over fun stuff on Tax Tuesday. We got inundated with a lot of questions after last week. In fact, some of the questions are specific to people freaking out from last week, because they heard something that set them off, which is good.
Yes.
We're getting it before they get a big tax bill, which means we can usually fix things. So we're going to go over all that, put some nerves at ease, and continue to make sure that we're making intelligent tax decisions. If you send in any question to Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors, then we like to take them and make them part of our actual presentations, and we answer them. And if you send them in, well, chances are we're going to kick them to someone to get an answer to you right away. If you need a detailed response, in other words, if you're asking very specific questions about tax matters that affect you, and you're not talking about a law or anything, but you're talking about, hey, I filed my 1040 and I have questions about line 58, then you'll need to be a platinum client or a tax client. You can always become both or either by going to Anderson Advisors or just reaching out to us saying, hey, I need to become a tax client. Hey, this is fun, fast, educational, and we want to make sure that we're keeping you entertained while we're doing it. But there's lots of questions. This week's questions, which we will go through one by one here in a second. Here's question number one. I am in Florida. If I liquidate an old 401k, $5,300, and take the cash, what taxes will I pay at tax time? That's a good question. We'll answer it. I have an office within my home. How do I sure indicate that on my taxes? My cell phone is used both business and personal use. How do I indicate business use on a tax form? I purchased another vehicle for business purposes. Do I need to title it in the name of my business? My husband and I have been incurring educational and coaching expenses for our new real estate business. We will not earn any income this year. However, we want to be able to deduct the expenses. I understand we need to create a C-Corp in order to do this. My question is, does the C-Corp have to be set up in 2018 in order to carry forward the deductions to next year? Or can we wait until 2019 to set up a C-Corp and still apply the expenses from 2018 to offset the 2019 income? Good question. We'll answer it. Heard something scary on the last Tax Tuesday. I wanted to follow up to ensure I wasn't doing something terrible on a flip. I'm scheduled to close next week. What I heard, if you get identified as a real estate dealer by the IRS, you get taxed 100% of the gain on the sale of the property in the first year, even if they're selling on installment owner financing. The property being flipped by an S-Corp, can an S-Corp get identified as a dealer? I'm the president of the S-Corp. Based on the time I spent in 2018 engaged in real estate activities, I should be designated as a real estate professional. Does this matter? If so, how? Any pointers on how this should be carried out in the future, differently than how I'm planning to do it? What is the minimum income required for 2018 to receive 4 credits towards Social Security Medicare benefits? In 2017, we paid my wife's mother a small amount for administrative services on a 1099. My wife and I are the only employees of the company currently, but was wondering if we could get around the self-employment tax if we made my mother a direct part-time employee. Also, we are considering a health benefit plan for the corporation. Was wondering if there's any negative aspects to doing so. Could health benefits be provided by the corporation to part-time employees as well, or is there a minimum hours worked requirement? We are conducting a full-time real estate business out of our home. It says C-Corp, so I'm assuming that the business is a C-Corp. What is the most beneficial way of us to calculate the home business deduction? I have heard there are several options. Let's just start jumping through these.
A lot of questions.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to leave you guys hanging, wondering what to do with yourselves if I'm not there. All right. If I liquidate an old 401k and take the cash, what taxes will I pay at tax time? Well, first off, we have to ask a question. Is it a Roth 401k or a traditional? It sounds like it is a traditional 401k and that you're taking the cash all at once. So we're making an assumption there that this is a traditional and just a standard 401k and that you're taking the cash right now. What taxes will I pay at tax time? Jeff, what do you think?
Well, we're also going to assume here that you're under the age of 59 and a half. for the first part of the answer, you're going to pay ordinary tax on this $5,300 if you pull it all out at once.
And if you're under 59 and a half, then you're going to have two choices. You're either going to pay a penalty of 10% plus that tax. This is a traditional 401k. If it is a Roth 401k, then you're not going to pay any tax on the money that you put in. But if it has gain, then you're going to pay penalty on that.
Unless you've held it for 5 years, right?
Even if you paid it for held it for five years, okay. I think you're always paying a penalty. Maybe. So I'd have to take a look at that one right off the top of my head. But I think that you can always get the money back out off of a Roth.
Right.
So that's first off. So there's a misnomer there. They're actually great savings accounts for young people, because if they get into an emergency and they actually need the money, they're not dealing with a whole bunch of penalties to take the money they put in out. And it's always the gain. You might be right. Maybe they're paying tax on that gain, but they don't have the penalty if they held it over 5 years.
Right.
I think.
And when you pull money out of those Roths, you're pulling your contributions out before you're pulling the income out.
Correct. You're taking the contribution back. So if I put $10,000 in a Roth over the years, I can take $10,000 out any time. Now that's different. If I'm putting it in a traditional, well, now I've taken a tax deduction. Now they penalize you. So if you take it out early, then you are going to be getting hit with the penalty tax, plus you're paying tax at your ordinary rate, and it's going to be your highest bracket. It's going to be your highest marginal rate. The other fun part of this is if you are 55, you can make what's called a 72T election. What that means is you could take equal payments over 5 years if you are under 59 and a half. And I think you have to do it at least 5 years.
I believe so.
So even if you're 58, you're still taking it over 5 years. And then you would avoid the $10,000 or the 10% penalty. You'd still pay ordinary tax on it.
Right.
If you're over 59 and a half, you're just paying the tax on it. You avoid the penalty.
So yeah, this pulling money out of a retirement plan, especially if you pull it out early, can get quite expensive tax-wise.
Mm-hmm. Very. So, but you got a deduction when you put it in. So,
right.
Here's the scenario that we see all the time. Somebody makes a nice big fat deduction. They were in a high income year and then they have a bad year and they're pulling the money out. Well, if they're having a bad year, chances are they're in a much lower tax bracket.
Yep.
That's when you should be either pulling the money out or switching it over into a Roth and taking the tax hit on the conversion. So anyway, that was fun. I have an office within my home. How do I show or indicate that on my taxes? So this is tax 101 for Anderson. We do not like home office deductions, number one. And that means you writing it off on your Schedule C. If you have a business and you're using a home office, you're filing, I think it's an 8829.
Right.
And you are writing that off as part of your business and it's on your return. And that's what everybody says. Hey, there's a red flag. The red flag is that you're filing a Schedule C on your personal return. Not just the home office, but the home office certainly doesn't help. What I'd rather see is a corporation, an S or a C corp in the mix, reimbursing you as an employee for your use or for the company's use of your home office. And it's not renting it from you. It's reimbursing you the expenses attributed to that portion of your home. So I'm going to draw this up. Let's say you have a house and you have this little section of your house called a home office. And it is, let's say that this one is 10 by 10. So it's 100 square feet. What the IRS allows your employer to do, an S or a C corp, is reimburse you the expenses of that home office. And the reimbursement is based off of the fact that you had expenses for the whole home. And it doesn't matter whether it's a rental or a purchased home, you still have expenses. You have expenses like real estate taxes, mortgage, utilities,
HOA,
all of it, HOA, even things like depreciation.
Yep.
Those are all expenses. And what it does is it lets you pay a percentage back. And guess what? Nowhere on your return does this money show up. And I say your return. This is the, I always use Krispy Kremes in my examples, but I say if I ask Jeff, hey, on your way into the office, grab some Krispy Kremes and I'll reimburse you. And Jeff goes and he buys a whole bunch of Krispy Kremes and he comes into the office and says, hey, that was $50. And we write him a company check for $50. Where does Jeff report that? The answer is he doesn't. He got reimbursed. So this is the most important word you'll ever hear, accountable. This is called an accountable plan. When you have an employer, they can reimburse you for things that you incur on their behalf. And that's just, there's a laundry list of them, but the most important ones are things like your computer, your cell phone, your home, your utilities that you're using for the convenience of the employer, all those things. Now it can reimburse you. So now we know that we want to get reimbursed. So don't do a home office because that's you. This is a business reimbursing you for the use of your home at their convenience. Changes up the rules a little bit. Now, the way to calculate this, there's a number of ways. The IRS has what's called a simple test, where this is $5 per square foot per year. So if this is 10 by 10, you would get a $500 deduction at the end of the year, or reimbursement. You don't have to report it. The company gets to just write off $500 as a lease expense. Okay, that sucks. The other way that people do is they look and say the entire house. So let's say the entire house, I don't know how big this should be. This looks like 30 by 30. So let's say you have a 30 by 30 house. So you have 1/9 would be the deduction. So if you have expenses of $9,000 throughout the year, you would get a $1,000 deduction. You get 1/9 of that because one, this is 100 square foot versus 900 square feet. Now there's another method. That's not the only methods. There's other, like there's actually like 9, although I've never seen all 9. I use about 3. Jeff, how many, like what are your favorites?
I only use a couple. I use these two. I use the simplified method.
You're such an accountant.
I'm such an accountant.
So there's two ways to do it. You could do the square footage method, which is based off of this 30 by 30 versus the 10 by 10. So it's 900 to 900 versus 100. You could use the net square footage where we remove hallways and bathrooms and places for your water heater and your air conditioner and all those things. You remove them and say, hey, we're only looking at the net usable square footage. This is what you use in commercial and stuff like
right.
that. So let's say that your net square footage, the net usable square footage, we have a hallway that runs through here and we have a, you know, couple of places, you know, here's where the water heater is and all that stuff. And let's say that we remove 200 square feet. Now it is 700 to 100, which I don't know what that is, but I'll just pretend that's got to be about 14%. That's another way, is that net square footage. And now there's another one that is not used enough, in my opinion, which is the number of rooms method, where we look at the total house and we say, hey, here's the area being used there. There's another, let's say that we have a total of 5 rooms, and this is all hallway or common space or something like that. But let's say that actually we'll make another room. We'll say, I think this is non-usable traffic area, kind of a goofy layout for a house. But let's just say we have 6 rooms. Now we are 6 to 1, and that's going to be way better. That's going to be 6 goes into 1 how many times? So that's 16.6%. So we would look at all the expenses, and you'd take 16% of that. So say that we have 9,000. So now I have a $1,400 expense, which is by far the best. Now it can reimburse me that amount. And again, I'm throwing numbers out at you. Your numbers are going to be way different just because 9,000 is not what it costs to actually own a home unless you're living in Indiana in a funky area.
And while we talk about mortgage and real estate taxes, depreciation a lot of people rent their homes, and that rent expense is also a part of this formula.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm going to do a shameless plug, and I'm going to tell you, if you want to learn about this stuff and you want to see the actually have the calculators and all that jazz that we use, then you're going to want to come to an event that's called TaxWise. You're going to want to go to that.
It's a blast.
Yeah, because we break it down. And so there's my shameless plug. You're going to want to come to that. Now, if you're platinum, you're probably getting free tickets. If you're not platinum, you're not. You're going to pay something. But for the platinum folks, this is a no-brainer. You know, yeah, you always want to come hang out with us about tax. That's just one. That's one of 29 different deductions we talk about, right? My cell phone is used for both business and personal use. How do I indicate business use on a tax form? Do you want to hit this one?
From my point of view is, if you're required to have a cell phone for business, I'm going to expense the whole thing.
All right. Here's where it becomes really important. It's this term accountable again. If your business says, Jeff, you need to have a cell phone because we like to call you at night or whenever you're wandering around, if you're going between locations, I need you to have that. It is 100% now not going to be personal. It is now going to be 100% business because it's for the convenience of the employer. And you don't have to worry about how much business use there is. If you do not have an accountable plan, and this is just you, your business, so you're Mr. Sole Proprietor or Mrs. Sole Proprietor, then you have to say what percentage is business and what percentage is personal. And you have to take that total bill and divide it. So if you're a sole proprietor, you're divvying it up. You're having to look at it. Now, I don't want you to have to do that. I don't want you to have to worry about that. So we're never going to recommend you to be a sole proprietor. Like, it's just not going to happen because from all three areas we look at, which is asset protection, tax, and estate planning, you're 0 for 3. There's no reason to do it. Now, if you are one of those people, then you need to be tracking this, that personal percentage. You can't say it's all 100% business. It's just impossible. Unless you have two cell phones. You can say, here's my business phone, here's my personal phone, or you have two lines, in which case you're going to be able to write off a portion of it. If you want to write it all off, make sure you have an ESSER C Corp reimbursing you under an accountable plan. All right. I purchased another vehicle. I like the way they say another vehicle. For business purposes, do I need to title it in the name of the business? Jeff, you like this stuff.
No, we're not going to. We recommend that you not title it in the business name. For a couple reasons. Liability, for one, it presents additional liability to the company, to your business. And second, it's a little more expensive to put it in your company. You may find that interest rates are higher if you're getting loans on the car. And commercial insurance on the auto is definitely going to be higher than personal insurance.
Yeah, because in theory, again, if you have it in a business, anybody in that business can go hop in and drive that car around. And you're also, whenever you're doing business, now you're liable for the anything that happens in it. So just by the nature of it, it's now a business asset. So the business is exposed plus you're exposed. Two people to defend equals more money. So it's more expensive.
Well, and I think sometimes we forget that we're using that car on non-business hours and we get in a wreck or something. It's still a business vehicle.
Ooh. All right. So here's our deal. Taxable personal use. So let's say that you're spending $50,000 on a car and you're using it 50% for business. First off, that's a problem. You have to use it more than 50% for business in order, or is it right at 50?
I think it's right at 50.
So you're right. If you're going to write that thing off, it's very easy for the IRS to come in and say, we think that that was actually disallowable deduction because it wasn't being used for more than 50%. Now, this isn't something where you just say it's 50%. You have to track this and prove that you used it more than 50%. Otherwise, no deduction, zero zilch. It is actually a personal asset, and now you're being thwarted. And if you took a deduction, they make you claim that as taxable income,
yes,
which is very bad. But here's the other side. Depending on the value of the vehicle, the IRS has a cool layout. It's a schedule of how much taxable income you have to include in your return every year that for that vehicle based on its price. So if it's $50,000, you're going to be paying, I think it's close to $10,000 that you're going to have to claim if you use it for personal use. That's 100% personal use. So if you're using it 50-50, you may have $5,000 taxable to you. Versus, what's the alternative?
You have a personal vehicle in your name and you're reimbursed under an accountable plan for the mileage taken. That's the easiest way I see doing it.
Yeah. Mileage is just 54.5 cents a mile, and I should say business mile. And the easiest way to track that is something called Mile IQ. Easy app. You can just go on, if you have an Apple or an Android phone, it'll GPS you. So you just say, I think you swipe right for business, swipe left for personal, right. Whatever it is. It's one of those types of apps where you're swiping and you just say, hey, this port, you know, this was a business trip, this was a personal trip, and it tracks it for you. And then at the end of the year, you just say, here's the amount of miles, and the company cuts you a check, and you don't have to report it personally, and the company writes it off as an expense. That's typically our recommendation. There are exceptions. And, you know, the reason that we say this is our typical is because you better show me there's a really good reason to have the business vehicle. So maybe you have a construction company where you have some trucks or something like that. Then maybe. But otherwise, if it's just your family car and you're just, you know, you're running around doing some real estate business or an MLM or something, you got to be really careful with this. There's a lot of people that have gotten burned on this one. And then once it's in the business, it's kind of a pain to get it out.
Yes.
It's not like you can just hand it to yourself and say, congratulations, here's a bonus. That's taxable to you. That fair market value gets hit. So I tend to be with Jeff. I like to see it in your personal name because it's cheaper. In the long run, you're getting a lot more benefit. My commercial insurance, I've done this before, was almost twice as much. So it always depends a little bit.
If you are a real estate investor, trader, or business owner who wants to lower your taxes, protect your assets, and build future wealth, then you need to attend the next 3-day tax and asset protection event sponsored by Anderson Business Advisors. At the event, podcast hosts Clint Coons, Toby Mathis, and Michael Bowman will discuss the art of building generational wealth, ninja equity stripping strategies to discourage lawsuits, the reason to forget LLCs for real estate, tax strategies to stay out of the IRS crosshairs, avoid the joint venture chamber of horrors, and much more. The Anderson Advisors Tax and Asset Protection event is held monthly throughout the country and via live stream. Join us for the next 3-day tax and asset protection event and network with other investors and business owners while learning strategies to build your wealth and help you sleep better at night with a solid peace of mind knowing you have prepared for anything. Learn about the next event dates and locations by going to AndersonAP.com and register today. That's AndersonAP.com to register. AndersonAP.com.
All right. My husband and I have been incurring educational and coaching expenses for our new real estate, real estate business. We will not earn any income this year. So I'm assuming they're talking about the real estate business.
We like real businesses.
Yeah. So this is a real business as opposed to a fake one. However, we want to be able to deduct the expenses. I understand we need to create a C-Corp in order to do this, and I will explain why. You're probably hearing that. Is that a 195? Is it startup expenses?
Right.
My question is, does the C-Corp have to be set up in 2018 in order to carry forward the deductions to next year? The answer is no. Or can we wait until 2019 to set up the C-Corp and still apply the expenses from 2018 to offset the 2019 income? Well, here's how it works. Just because you pay for something during a tax year does not make it applicable as a deduction in that particular year. When it's a startup expense, what we're doing is anything that's in the investigation or the creation of your business is captured as a startup expense. It's actually 26 USC 195. And what that allows you to do is go back in time and grab things that would have been deductible to the business had it been in existence. But knowing that the business is not in existence, we're getting it ready to go, you're able to go back and grab those. And then you can write off up to $5,000 in the first year of the business, but you amortize the rest over 15 years. Unless it's over $50,000, if it's over $50,000, then we're amortizing over 15 years without regard to the $5,000 bonus. I know that sounds complicated. What it means is it really depends on how much you're spending. If you're spending a few $1,000s getting some coaching, then don't worry about it. If you're spending more, then you better get set up sooner than later unless you want to just be taking a portion of it 1/15th every year. So if you spend, $60,000, you're taking
$4,000
a year as a deduction. So I mean, it helps. You're writing it off, but you're writing it off over a longer period of time. So, hope that helps. If you're a few expenses, wait. If you're not, get it going really quick because we want to capture those as ordinary expenses, which means we may look and say, what's the value of what you already paid for? Expense that as a startup and look at the value of everything you still got and expense that as ordinary expense right away. And the other thing is C-Corps don't have the same tax year. So 2018 for the C-Corp could be next year.
Right.
If we set it up now and we have a taxable year end and at the end of November, it's still a 2018 expense. Sounds weird, but it would be all the way in November of 2019 and you'd be filing your tax return in 2020, but the expense would be from 2018. I'd love just trying to confuse the credit people. All right, move on. Heard something scary on the last Tax Tuesday. Well, it was close to Halloween, and I was trying to scare everybody.
Good job.
I wanted to follow up to ensure that I wasn't doing something terrible on a flip. I'm scheduled to close next week. But I heard, if you get identified as a real estate dealer by the IRS, you get taxed on 100% of the gain on the sale of the property in the first year, even if selling on installments. Well, all right. So if you're a dealer, then you do not get something called installment sale treatment. Is that 475?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's 475. I'm reasonably certain. But what it says is that there's an exception to being able to designate something under the installment sale method. So in other words, installment means I'm taking money over time. So if I sell Jeff my house and I say, pay me over 10 years, then I am electing to treat that as an installment sale. Then I am receiving that income over 10 years. And it's a great way to defer the tax out into the future. Now, if you hold inventory for the resale to customers, which is what a dealer does in real estate, I'm buying real estate. I'm holding it for as inventory and I'm selling it. I buy property with the intent to sell it. I do not get to take installment sale. Did I pick the right statute?
Yep. Right. No, wrong statute.
Oh, which one is it?
445. 475 is mark to market.
Darn it. All right. So I'm thinking about traders. What's installment sale? I'm going to trip myself out here.
It's not participating.
I'm going to find out. I'm going to drive myself crazy.
453.
453. So that's the installment method. Too many sections both running around in my head. So 453, and the exception to that is the dealer. So here's why it's really bad to be treated as a dealer. If you're doing this, you are taxed on 100% of the gain the year that you sell it. So in real life, I'll give you a real life situation that happened to a client is they bought a piece of property for about $4 million. They were going to develop it and sell off the pieces. And somebody comes in, and this was actually in 2007, and says, hey, I need that land. And they said, well, we don't really want to sell it to you. And they said, how about I give you $7 million for it? So they're like, oh, wow, a $3 million gain. And they said, but we're going to pay you over time. And they said, good. Because we don't want to have to pay tax on all this money. And of course, think of the timing of it. They never got a dime on the sale. And the IRS taxed them on the $3 million. And then they said, but they defaulted. The land ended up not being worth half of what we paid for it. All these losses, all this stuff. And the problem was, it didn't matter. The taxable event happened the day that they sold the property to the guy for $7 million. It took them 2 years to figure out the project was down. In that 2 years, there was interest and penalties on that non-reported $3 million of income. And so they got slapped around very hard. They eventually were able to write off the debt, having reasonably tried to collect it as bad debt, but that took till year three after the sale. Then they were able to carry back some of those losses, but it doesn't erase the penalties and interest. And they ended up out about $300,000 that they never thought in their accountant completely missed. So when they came to us, they were like, well, what do we do? And I said, well, there's nothing you can do except, you know, we got them right when they were trying to collect on the note. And I said, you have to use reasonable methods to collect the note, and then you have to write it off as business bad debt. And the accountant had dropped him, of course, because he was scared of getting sued. Anyway, so that's dealer. Now, being the president of the S Corp, you may be able to be a real estate professional. Does that matter? The answer is no, unless you have losses. Real estate professional status only matters if you are taking massive amounts of depreciation on properties and creating losses, because then you can offset your ordinary, your active income, your W-2 job and everything else with those losses. But in this case, would not matter. So how should it be carried out in the future? Don't do installment sales on flips, because you're not going to get that treatment.
Right.
It's going to be denied. So if you're going to do this, I wish I had an easy method for you. What you may want to do is fix the flip, sell it to something that's going to be owning it for a longer term period. That's an investment company. Like, you're going to have to be disciplined about it and hold it for years and then sell it under installment sale and let it season. Otherwise, don't do that installment sale. If they need financing, have them go to a bank or have them go to another lender, because you are paying tax on 100% of that regardless. If anybody tells you differently, I'm just kidding. They're wrong. Flat out. Simple. You can go read the statute. It says this is not available to people that hold it in the ordinary course. You can go read it yourself. 26 U.S.C. and what do you say, 453? So anyway, fun stuff. So I'm sorry I scared you. Hopefully we're lessening the beating you're going to take tax-wise. And if you are getting beat tax-wise, it means you're making money. It doesn't mean that, like, this is horrible. It just means you're not going to pay tax in the future on that money as you receive it. The only money you'll pay tax on is the interest that you're earning on that installment note, because you're going to pay all the tax this year. Jeff, you love this stuff. What is the minimum income required for Social Security, Medicare benefits, or to receive your four credits?
So in 2018, to get four credits, you would have to earn $5,280. And then in 2019, that goes up to $5,440. So it's bumping up about the same rate as the Social Security increases are.
Well, that was too easy. All right. So, see, Jeff answers things very quickly, right to the point. He's an accountant.
I'll add that I believe you have to have at least 40 credits before you can collect Social Security.
There you go. So they want their four credits. There we go. In 2017, we paid my wife's mother a small amount of it for administrative services on 1099. So we're not going to discuss whether she's an employee or a contractor. We're just going to say, okay, My wife and I are the only employees of the company currently, but was wondering if we could get around the self-employment tax if we made her mother a direct part-time employee. The answer is no. You either pay it as, or she pays it. So if she pay, so if you 1099'd her, it's her responsibility to pay the Social Security and the Medicare. If you pay her as an employee, you're paying half and she's paying half, and it's being withheld. And so if I'm you and I want to get money to mom, I'm probably going to say, hey, can I rent her house for a meeting? And I'm going to 288, which means I'm going to give her tax-free income. That's it. Or I'm going to have her sit on the board. And your next part of this question comes up where you say, hey, I want to do health benefit plan. This is what's called a fringe benefit. And depending on the type of company, it might be taxable or non-taxable. But let's just assume that this is a C corp where you enter into a 105 plan, which is a medical reimbursement plan. You're going to have to comport with the ACA, meaning that everybody has insurance or that the company's at least providing basic coverage. And it's going to be really tough because there's very few people that provide coverage under group plans. What I'd probably say is you're going to go with the faith-based, or they're going to already have insurance coverage.
So what the ACA says is that you have to cover, if you have a group plan, you have to cover full-time employees. You do not have to cover part-time employees.
I don't know if you can. I guess you could.
You can cover them. I did double check on that. So you can cover them. You can opt to do it. I think a couple things are going to happen if you add your mother-in-law to it. I think it's going to make your group rates much higher.
Well, here's the thing. If you don't have mother-in-law and it's just you and a wife, then you don't have to worry about the ACA.
Correct.
You're exempt. If you bring mom on as an employee, now you have a little bit of an issue. So I'd be looking at other ways to get it to mom.
Yeah.
But now if she is on, then any benefit you give yourself, you have to give her, unless she's less than 1,000 hours, in which case you don't have to give it. You just treat her like she's not there, in which case that defeats the purpose. You want to give her something. What you could do, though, is if she is an employee and you don't even have to pay her a wage to do this, you give her other fringe benefits, like, again, home office and cell phone, computers, things like that. So, like, there's ways to get money to somebody that is not what you necessarily think. And could the health benefits be provided? Yes, it sounds like they could.
They could be.
I don't know if there's a minimum. No, you know what? You're right, because I've looked at this. There was an audit where the guy, all he did was work for his medical benefits. And there wasn't an hour requirement. He was like 5 hours a week or something. So less than 1,000 hours, you're not required to give it to him. Over 1,000 hours, I think you're into that point where you're probably going to be required. I forget the exact, so don't quote me on that, but it's something around there. We are conducting a full-time real estate business out of our home, C Corp. What is the most beneficial way to calculate the home business deduction?
This sounds familiar.
Yeah, did I already do that one? Well, maybe they asked it twice, so I'm going to ignore that.
Our answer has not changed.
Yep. And look at that. Did we already get to the bottom? Yeah, I guess we did. No, they did ask that question twice. This is funny. That's me being crazy. Wow, we went through a lot of questions. I thought there was a bunch more. I was getting all excited thinking we're going to be here all day. But I guess that we didn't. So if you have questions anytime, you just put them in at Tax Tuesday at Anderson Advisors, and we may pick it and put it on in one of those areas. Now, I want to switch gears here just for a quick sec, that there is a tax-wise special for $197. This is what's cool. If you go to AndersonAdvisors.com Tax Tuesday offer, you're going to get to see it. And what it is, real easy, is this last tax-wise that I taught, we did 29 tax strategies. And of those tax strategies, we jumped into the qualified opportunity zone where you can defer capital gains for at least 7 years if you invest in qualified economic zones, and explain what that is, and jumped into, you know, accelerating your depreciation. So even on single family residences now, you can accelerate that depreciation and potentially, if you're a real estate professional, offset all your other income, get your taxes way low, depending on how many properties you have and how much improved value they have. We can get about a 20% boost on the value of the house in the first year just in depreciation, extra depreciation. So you can kind of do your own math. The calculations usually run around there. Went over how to use the home office, how to use things like vehicles, 1031 exchanges, how to the real estate professional, all the different requirements on those, along with another 20 or so different types of deductions, everything from how to use maximize Roth 401ks to get $55,000 a year into a Roth, to how to use a traditional 401k, how to use defined benefit plans. We just went over an example of a guy who was putting over $600,000 a year tax deferred into a defined benefit plan. We do all that. And it was just a really good tax-wise event that we just did a couple weeks ago. So you're going to get a recording of that. Plus, we're going to do a new tax laws for 2019, special tax wise, on January 25th and 26th. So you're going to get access to that too. So you're going to get the recording so you can get yourself up to speed for year-end tax strategies, how to hopefully reduce your taxes even before the end of the tax of the year, so you pay a whole bunch less come tax time. And then we're going to show you how to avoid and reduce your taxes in 2019. You're going to get both of those for one cost of $197. You just go to the andersonadvisors.com/Tax Tuesday offer. Now, this is why this is cool. This is for everybody. Now, if you are platinum, you can come live to the event in January. So you're not going to, it's still going to be the 197, but you have to be platinum if you're going to come. And we're going to give you two tickets to come to that. So you can come in and watch it live. Now, the TaxWise event, I can just say with 99.9% certainty, this one's going to sell out, and it's going to sell out early. So go in. If you want to be live, make sure you sign up for the offer and let our office know that you want one of the live seats. It will sell out, so jump on that one. The live stream, well, we can have thousands of people on the live stream, so that one's not going to sell out. In the recordings, well, there's no limit on the recordings. Everybody can watch the recording. I just think it's really cool. It's 2 days and we go over a whole bunch of strategies. I'm excited about what we just did and I'm excited for the new one. All right. So that's it for me. I just wanted to basically tell everybody that you had that opportunity and hopefully I'll see you again at another Tax Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.